हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकर वावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
His austerities. Let him, going at the savanas, at sunrise, at midday, and at sunset, to water in the forest in order to bathe. Let him live with... So in other words, he bathes, you know, at least three times a day. So he's mentioning these three times. That's also then he'll chant his mantras, his gayatris. Let him... 101. Let him live without a fire, without a house, wholly silent, subsisting on roots and fruit, making no effort to procure things that give pleasure, chaste, sleeping on the bare ground, not caring for any shelter, dwelling at the roots of trees. Right? Because before it mentioned the Brahmins don't live at the roots of trees. The Grihastha doesn't live at the roots of trees. But the Vanaprastha, then he can live at the roots of trees. Right? Because, you know, other things are there. It may not be so great down there. So, but for the Vanaprastha, it doesn't matter. So you're getting the aspect is that he can have something there or not have something, because we'll see is that the Vanaprastha can increase his austerities until the point where he leaves the body as a Vanaprastha. Or he can just become very austere and then after that take sannyas and travel. So you'll see that two aspects are going on at once. One is just the general lifestyle and basic austerities, and then more severe austerities. Right. So the principle is that he's trying to become not interested or not worried about the benefits to the body. Right. From Brahmins who live as ascetics, let him receive alms, barely sufficient to support life, or from other householders of the twice-born caste who reside in the forest. Right? So the ascetics themselves, you know, or like himself, or who are just living in the forest, or from Brahmins who are living in the forest. These and other observances must a Brahmin who dwells... Or the hermit who dwells in the forest may bring food from a village, receiving it either in a hollow dish of leaves in his naked hand or in a broken earthen dish, and may eat 8 mouthfuls, right? Because we mentioned Chandrayana, if you eat 8 mouthfuls only a day, it's equal to the Chandrayana fasting. So that means he's either in the forest, he collects from those in the forest, or there's not that many people there in the forest, he can also collect from the local village. These and other observances must a Brahmin who dwells in the forest diligently practice. And in order to obtain complete union with the Supreme Soul, he must study the various sacred texts contained in the Upanishads, right? So now he'll be focusing more on studying Upanishads, right? Previously he was studying the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, but now the Upanishads, so the philosophy becomes more prominent for him. As well as those rites and texts which have been practiced and studied by the sages and by Brahmana householders, in order to increase their knowledge of Brahman, and their austerity, and in order to sanctify their bodies. So anything that's dealing with the philosophy, or with any, you know, analytical texts. Because the idea is that now he's looking how to analyze, how to break things apart, how things are not to be so attractive. Yes?
Did he study alone?
Here it means he's been studying as a grihastha, But, you know, specifically they would be studying, means ideally philosophy, but they would be studying those texts in connection with whatever their occupation is. Right? So if they're doing yajñas, or if they're doing the Shrauta yajñas, or, you know, they're involved in whatever it is their field of expertise, that would be a prominent study.
But now as a Vanaprastha.
But now as a Vanaprastha, then philosophy becomes more important.
But mainly alone? Alone?
Alone means?
Alone means only one by one, or in a group?
That if there's other people, but he's living on his own, so if there's other people there, great. And if there's not, then, you know, the point is he's studying these things. If others are there, then that's nice. It goes into, but it's not a rule. He has to study in a group. He has to study. So if there's a group, great. And if there's not, then he'll study alone. Yeah. The point is to study. Or let him walk, fully determined and going straight on in a northeasterly direction, subsisting on air, water and air until his body sinks to rest. Right. So that's Mahaprasthan. So that means you don't eat, but just air and water, you just walk in a northeasterly direction, right? Until the body goes to rest, right? So that's a one way. A Brahman, having gotten rid of his body by one of those modes practiced by the great sages, is exalted in the world of Brahman, free from sorrow and fear, right? Because one who leaves the body by fasting, then you're immediately exalted to the immense here, the world of Brahman. So once philosophical, you'll be liberated. If he was Karmakandi, then to Brahmaloka, like that. But basically speaking, it's the normal thing is this one doesn't take birth again, right? But only if one's a devotee, then one would actually never take birth again. Otherwise, they may go to the Brahman, but he'll be back. But it will liberate you. Just like it mentioned there, if the woman after the husband died is chaste, then just by that process, then she will be elevated to Brahmaloka. So here the Vanaprastha, you know, then by passing his time, becoming more and more austere. So he just practices austerities till they become more and more austere. Right. Like that. That's the idea. Sannyasashram, topic 15. Final emancipation and renunciation. Renunciation. But having thus passed the third part of a man's natural term of life, in the forest, he may live as an ascetic during the fourth part of his existence, after abandoning all attachment to worldly objects. Right? So, means he can either leave as a Vanaprastha, or then, after he's become austere and adjusted to not being absorbed in worldly pleasures, then he can move on to sannyas. Riti. Lord Krishna states in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.12, Yada karma vipakeshu lokeshu nirayatmasu su virago jayate samyam nyastagni pravrajet tata. If the Vanaprastha understand that even promotion to Brahmaloka is a miserable condition, situation, develops complete detachment from all possible results of fruitive activities, then he may take the sannyas order of life. Right? So in other words, if he's trying to get the Brahmaloka, then better to stay as a Vanaprastha. Because most of these sages and all that we hear about, they're all Vanaprasthas. Like that. Very few are actually sannyasis. Because if there's any idea of any kind of result that you're getting from you know, the result means ending up within the material situation, then it's better that one is not a sannyasi. Right? Means he wants, yogis go to Brahmaloka like that, you know, if he wants mystic powers or any of these kind of things, then better than they don't. He who, after passing from order to order, and offering sacrifices and subduing his senses, being tired with giving alms and offerings of food, becomes an ascetic, gains bliss after death. So in other words, he's tired of all these things because he's doing them because of the results he gets. Right? So now it's like other duties are there. So for him, more important is the studying, chanting, preaching these aspects. So these other pious, good aspects aren't so important to him. It's not that he's opposed to them. It's just that he doesn't have that enthusiasm to perform those anymore. Right? Because he's been, as mentioned, he's been passing from order to order. He's been doing it a long time. Right? Having studied the Vedas in accordance with the rule, he may direct his mind to the attainment of final liberation. His conduct and attitude. Worlds radiant in brilliancy become the portion of him who recites the text regarding Brahman and departs from his house as an ascetic after giving a promise of safety to all beings. For a man, the need for emotional dependency on women gives rise to desire, and frustration of those desires gives rise to anger. Having given up this dependency, one no longer sees others as a source of or an obstacle to material gain. Thus, becoming free from anger, one may then be competent to offer a promise of safety to all. Right? Because no one's an enemy, no one's an obstacle, no one's a disturbance. And not only that, he's being very careful about other living entities because he's not so absorbed in his own needs that he won't notice. Right? For that twice-born man by whom not the smallest danger even is caused to created beings, there will be no danger from any quarter after he is freed from his body. Right? So after he leaves the body, there's no danger. Danger of taking birth again or any kind of thing like that. Yes.
So to know what we have gone through, it can be understood that after Brahmas, the ashram, one has to either take the one first or like,
yes.
When it's sannyas.
Yes.
So, but one should not end up at Brahmas.
It means the ideal is, you know, like you said, unless you get run over by a bus or something, you don't want to leave your body as a grihastha. You know, if the natural life goes, then one would want to retire from that. Because grihastha means he's engaging the senses in pious activities, right? As opposed to restricting the senses from fruitive activities and being only engaged in the, you know, the spiritual endeavor. Does that make sense? So ultimately, everything the devotee does is connected, if he understands, is connected with Krishna. So even the grihastha is getting that spiritual benefit. But there is the point where one gets tired of doing all those things in consideration of, you know, the mundane aspects. And so one just wants to deal directly instead of with so much of the indirect, right? So then, therefore, then that's why then one lives a more simple or detached lifestyle. Because what it means is that the direct activities remain, or you can increase them, but the indirect activities you reduce down to as little as possible. Just what's, you know, necessary. Does that make sense? You know, so you're not trying to make the life fancy. You know, just it's comfortable enough that you can function. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Because even pious activities, because you're doing them for Krishna, but the consideration is the pious activity. Right? It's not Krishna, because Krishna doesn't necessarily need that pious activity. You could do something else for Krishna. But you're doing that pious activity because of your situation. So it doesn't have the same effect as if you're just doing something that would be directly more in consideration of Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. So those kind of things would drop off. Like if you're worshipping the deity, that wouldn't drop off. But, you know, so many social things that one's doing, even though it's according to Shastra and you're doing it and seeing everybody connect to Krishna, after a while those get a little tiresome. Does that make sense? So it's not that one's opposed to them. It's others who are... It's at that stage in life, you'd be very supportive. So it's not like when you decide to be renounced, that everybody should be renounced. It's not one of those, you know. But it's not that style. Okay. Right. In other words, if you're causing a problem for others, then there'll be a problem for you. If you're not causing a problem for anybody else, there won't be any problem for you. Like that. Departing from his house, fully provided with the means of purification, pavitra, let him wander about absolutely silent. Right? So that means not talking anything that's not spiritual. And caring nothing for enjoyments that may be offered to him. It means he's not interested. like that. It doesn't mean if somebody offers you something to eat, it doesn't mean that you don't eat it, but it just means that you're not caring about these things, you're not looking for them. Riti, the means of purification are items such as knowledge of the scripture, sadhana, and water pot. Sri Krishna Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.14 gives the following warning and advice to sannyasis. Viprasya vai sannyasato deva daradhi rupina vignan kuravant yayam hyasman akramya samiyat param. This man taking sannyas is going to surpass us and go back home, back to Godhead. Thus thinking, the demigods create stumbling blocks on the path of the sannyasi by appearing before him in the shape of his former wife or other women and attractive objects. But the sannyasi should pay the demigods and their manifestations no heed. So that's the meaning of indifference. It's just, it's not necessary. So he just... So, because the demigods are neophyte devotees, and they worry about stuff like this. So, that's how we do.
They're quite
tricky. Candy. Yeah. So therefore, one doesn't... That's what he says. He doesn't pay the manifestations any heed. His point is for the devotee, there is no. He doesn't see in any given situation an opportunity for sense gratification. So therefore, it doesn't matter what manifestations are there. There's not an opportunity for sense gratification. Therefore, there's no material interest. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's how the devotee will go beyond, because Krishna's talking this, so he's talking about devotees. Let him always wander alone, without any companion, in order to attain final liberation, fully understanding that the solitary man, who neither forsakes nor is forsaken, gains his end. Because someone else may not be satisfied with what you're doing, you know, you can't satisfy them. So the basic thing is, why get involved? You know, the only one to disappoint is yourself, right? So therefore... Riti, in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.13, Srila Prabhupada writes, it is the duty of a mendicant, Paribra Jakacharya, to experience all varieties of God's creation by traveling alone through all forests, hills, towns, villages, etc., to gain faith in God and strength of mind, as well as to enlighten the inhabitants with the message of God. Right, because he'll see the Lord in everything, all the different aspects, splendor, and that. Before, he would look at the forest, you know, how they're going to have a good time there, go to the hills, or everything that's there would be seen, how to have a nice time, a nice vacation, right? But now he's not looking at it that way, right? Now he's just seeing it that as manifestations of God's creation, God's greatness, right? So, and he's alone, but things always work out. He always gets things, everything goes on, life works. So he gets that experience, that faith, that strength of mind, all these different things. And then while he's going, then whoever he comes across, then he preaches. A sannyasi is duty bound to take all these risks without fear, right? Because fear means you're not seeing the relationship with the Lord. Right? If you see your relationship with the Lord, there's nothing to be afraid of, right? Because we're not the body. That doesn't mean he's stupid. He just means You know, it still doesn't means that he's not going to enter into a house he can't, abandon house he can't see inside and things like that. He's still going to follow that kind of rule because they're just typical rules of safety. And the most typical sannyasi of the present age is Lord Chaitanya, who traveled in the same manner through the central Indian jungles, enlightening even the tigers, bears, snakes, deer, elephants, and many other jungle animals. In this age of Kali, sannyas is forbidden for ordinary men. One who changes his dress to make propaganda is a different man from the original ideal sannyasi. One should, however, take the vow to stop social intercourse completely and devote life exclusively to the service of the Lord. The change of dress is only a formality, right? Because the principle given by Krishna in the Gita of sannyas is that one, one does not see any activity, that the result is for oneself. It's always for Krishna. So that's sannyas. So everybody should come to that platform. That's the idea. Everyone should come to that. Lord Chaitanya did not accept the name of a sannyasi. And in this age of Kali, the so-called sannyasis should not change their former names, following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya. In this age, devotional service of hearing and repeating the glories of the Lord is strongly recommended. And one who takes the vow of renunciation of family life need not imitate the Parivachakacharya like Narada or Lord Chaitanya, but may sit down at some holy place and devote his whole time and energy to hear and repeatedly chant the holy scriptures left by the great acharyas like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Right, so Prabhupada's pointing out the main principle is that one is detached from the family endeavor and one is absorbed in studying the scriptures and preaching. Right? So one is dependent on the Lord, takes all risks for the preaching. He's not worried about his own, you know, being how he's going to be taken care of. And you don't imitate. So that doesn't mean we'll do just like Lord Chaitanya did or like Narad Muni does, right? Because if you can take your veena and then play it and fly through the space, then we might consider that, you know, okay. But then, if not, then we don't. And in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 225, according to the regulations of the Sanatana Dharma Institution, one is trained from the beginning to depend fully on the protection of the Lord in all circumstances. The path of renunciation is recommended for acceptance by one who is fully accomplished and fully purified in his existence. Right, so everybody's trained in this process, and when one is fully purified, then it's recommended that then it would be useful taking to this order. But otherwise, everybody in the practice of Sanatana Dharma is being trained in this method. Right? So all the orders are trained. Okay. This stage is described also in the Bhagavad Gita 16.5 as Daivi Sampat. A human being is required to accumulate Daivi Sampat, or spiritual assets. That's what Sampat means. Assets. Because in the yajna, you keep a pot of water and you offer the oblation in the fire, there's always a little ghee left and you drop it into that pot of the water. So each offering is done like that. It's called sampat. So it means assets, because then that is taken and sprinkled on the yajama's head. Like that. The next alternative is asuri sampat, or material assets, will overcome him disproportionately, and thus one will be forced into the entanglement of different miseries of the material world. A sannyasi should always live alone, without company, and he must be fearless. He should never be afraid of living alone, although he is never alone. The Lord is residing in everyone's heart, and unless one is purified by the prescribed process, one will feel that he is alone. But a man in the renounced order of life must be purified by the process. Thus he will feel the presence of the Lord everywhere and will have nothing to fear, such as being without any company. Because the Lord's always there, he's in the heart, so he's never alone. It's never a problem. Everyone can become fearless and honest person if his very existence is purified by discharging the prescribed duty for each and every order of life. One can become, so one's following the prescribed order. One can become fixed in one's prescribed duty by faithful oral reception of Vedic instructions and assimilation of the essence of Vedic knowledge by devotional service to the Lord. So you're following the Vedic injunctions as heard from authority, but you're doing it in connection with the Lord. Right? So then one becomes purified, one moves forward. Because following this process not in connection with the Lord, that's basically useless. So that's why all these different things are being described by the Lord and by Srila Prabhupada. But it's meant for the devotees, to be practicing as devotees, because service will be rendered through some medium. Right? So then this is the medium. Right? Does that make sense? You have the direct activities. The other activities then are according to one's nature. Those are rendered in connection with the Lord. You do that, one becomes purified. One naturally goes then through these stages. Yes.
sannyasi, the standard for a sannyasi to be mainly alone?
That means alone means that one is not in material company, right? So in other words, one doesn't have company because one will feel alone. But for preaching and those things, then one may be in a group or different things like that. But the point, just like silence means no material talking.
Yes.
So alone means no material association. You know, it can also mean alone. It's not a problem. You know, grihastha, generally, it's not good he travels alone. It's good he travels in a group of four, right? That's safe. That's the standard. Right? But sannyasi can travel alone. So there's so many things a grihastha wouldn't do that the sannyasi might. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, a grihastha look at what's more safe, what's more comfortable, you know, the elements of purity, all these different things. The sannyasi won't look at that as much. Right? He'll keep himself pure, but you know, he's just moving, you know, from place to place for his own and for others' benefit. Okay. Because one sees one's prescribed duties as, you know, one's duty towards the Supreme Lord. So the identity is there, there's no problem. I'm servant of the Lord. So the position you're once in, one uses it in the Lord's service. Okay. And the assimilation of the essence of Vedic knowledge, meaning that the devotional activity, like we were just reading with these 10 verses from the Bhagavad Gita, you know, that give all the essences, right? The actual philosophy, the tattva of the nature of the soul, God, and the material energy, right? The being able to see the Lord in everything, right? That surrender to the Lord, engaging in devotion, and then giving that to others, right? So these are This is the essence of the devotional knowledge. He shall neither possess a fire nor a dwelling. He may go to a village for his food. So he doesn't have a fire. The vanaprastha may. Because having the fire, that's for the grihastha. Right? The brahmachari, he's living at the spiritual master's place. So he performs the fire yagya, but it's not his fire. Right? Like that belongs to the teacher. Grihastha, then it's his fire. Vanaprastha, then it's also, if he wants, he can also continue. But the sannyasi, he doesn't keep a fire. Nor a dwelling, so he doesn't have a specific that's his. Right? He may go to a village for his food. He shall be indifferent to everything, firm of purpose, meditating and concentrating his mind on Brahman. A potsherd instead of an alms bowl. The roots of trees for a dwelling. Coarse, worn-out garments. Life in solitude and indifference towards everything are the marks of one who has attained liberation. A pot shard means a part of a pot. It's not a full pot. It broke a piece of pot. So that's why the grihastha never uses that, because that's a sign of you know, how you say it, the sannyasi. It means socially dead. So grihasthas are supposed to be socially alive. If they're socially dead, you know, no one wants to invite them to their program, right? You know, so, yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right, you mentioned grihastha traveling before.
Yeah.
So what's that? And if you're like, reaching to go in
the... No, it's just it said Chanakya mentions four is strong. You study in two. I forget what you do is three, and traveling is a four. Like that. Let him not desire to die, let him not desire to live. Let him wait for his appointed time as a servant waits for the payment of his wages. Right? He doesn't want to die, because then that's a desire, right? He doesn't want to live. It's not that he cares about that. So the point is he doesn't care. If he lives or dies, it doesn't matter. If he's alive, he'll serve Krishna. If he dies, he'll serve Krishna. So it doesn't really matter.
Would a grihastha also be like that?
Why would a grihastha think like this?
I don't know where they all only always want to live. And I don't know, it's a different ashram, but we didn't really mention it for how they think about dying.
Because they don't think about dying.
Yeah,
grihasthas think they'll live forever, right? So that's why it's not mentioned. Does that make sense? It means the point is this: one is always aware that the material world is like a water on a lotus leaf. But the point is this: he's not. It's not a meditation that they have, right? You know, because it's something you don't bring up. You know what I'm saying? Family members don't appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But the point is. The principle at sannyas means is everything's for Krishna, so whether one lives or dies, one will serve Krishna. So one could be in that state. But here it's just bringing it out as a stronger point because then it's a more prominent element. Right? Like that. Because it's not that he's engaging so many varieties of indirect activities. No, he's traveling and preaching. So he's just studying, traveling, and preaching. There are no other activities. Does that make sense? So therefore, there's plenty of time to contemplate how everything goes. But for the grihastha, there's so much engagement in direct activities. Though if he's very expert, then all those activities will be connected to the Lord, and as for pleasure of the Lord. So therefore, there'll still be sannyas, but that situation, then you have so many things to do. So you don't have that kind of... Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's a different flavor. Let him put down his foot purified by his sight. Let him drink water purified by straining with a cloth. Let him utter speech purified by truth. That means, so in other words, the Shastra, Krishna consciousness. Let him keep his heart pure. Okay. I'm not sure if it mentions it later. I think it's somewhere else here, but here, Vriti. Putting down one's foot purified by sight indicates scanning the ground at 12 feet in front while one walks. So the sannyasi is his duty to look 12 feet in front to make sure that between him and there's nothing he's going to step on. Because he said before, he's given a vow of safety for everyone. Right? After giving a promise of safety to all created beings. So in other words, he's not going to, you know, because he's, you know, in ecstasy because, how you say, his son was born, or, you know, his daughter just passed her exams, or that, so he's walking down the road and stepping on everything that happens to be on the path. Right? So he's always scanning the ground. He's seeing that that's there. Sri Krishna also states in Srimad Bhagavatam 11:18-16, Drishti putam nyaset padam, vastra putam pibej jalam, Satyaputam vadet vacham manaputam samacharet. A saintly person should step or place his foot on the ground only after verifying with his eyes that there are no living creatures, such as insects, who might be injured by his foot, right? Insects, frogs, you know, anything that happens to be there. Like that. He should drink water only after filtering it through a portion of his cloth. Right? And he should speak only words that possess the purity of truth. Similarly, he should perform only those activities his mind has carefully ascertained to be pure. So like that. He is always being careful. So the point of these things is, as we said, is these elements are there for everybody in the order, but here it's where it's the most prominent. Just like we said, is in the grihastha, they have the facilities for guests. That's why it's explained there. But it's not that the, you know, the hermits, they have guests over, because it mentioned you don't ask the guest for something. So he'll follow the rules of the guest, you know, according to his position that is mentioned in the grihastha ashram. But it's not the prominent feature. Him, it's basically being very, very restrictive on the senses. Right? Does that make sense? That's the vanaprastha. The brahmachari, then the focus is on study and menial service. Right? So the sannyasi, then it's on this, not being involved in anything within the material sphere, you know, by that vision he has. And so therefore, he's everything, he's seeing everything in connection to the Lord. So that's because that's all you have to do all day. Right? So whatever is that aspect, you'll deal like that, you know, throughout. So it's not that these points aren't followed by the brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and grihasthas. It's that it's not the prominent element. So whenever they can, these things are considered and all that. But it's not that. But these things are the prominence in the life of the sannyasi. Does that make sense? Let him patiently bear hard words. Let him not insult anybody. And let him not become anybody's enemy for the sake of this perishable body. Against an angry man, let him not in return show anger. Let him bless when he is cursed. Let him not utter speech devoid of truth, scattered at the seven gates. Riti. Truth indicates transcendence. The seven gates are the seven openings in the head. Or alternatively, they are the five senses, the mind and the intellect is the seventh. Only when these seven have perceived objects may they be spoken about. Right? So it's through these seven gates that one perceives the world. And then from that, then there is only truth is dealt with in connection with that. So whatever is perceived, one deals with it according to truth. Like that. It means according to transcendence. Yes.
The spiritual master deals with anger for the sake of transcendence, right?
That's training, so you do properly. But this means for his own, means for this perishable body. You know what I'm saying? So like that, you know, you say, you know, I've been around for 30 years, and what's been around for 30 years? The body, right? That's been, you know, around for 30 years. The soul's been around for eternity, like that, you know, so I've been around for eternity. Yeah, well, so have I. You know, so my eternity is more eternity than your eternity. You know, so, you know, as they say, it just doesn't really work, right? So, in other words, all these things are in connection with the body. Does that make sense? Delighting in what refers to the soul, here is capital S, so it means the Lord. Sitting in postures prescribed by the yoga, right? So in other words, sitting properly. Independent of external help, like the grihastha may lounge around and enjoy his house. The sannyasi generally sits for, you know, what will be more useful for, you know, like that. There are asanas for sleeping also, the yoga asana. Independent of external help. Entirely abstaining from sensual enjoyments, with himself for his only companion, he shall live in this world desiring the bliss of final liberation. Neither by explaining prodigies and omens, nor by skill in astrology and palmistry, nor by giving advice and by the exposition of the shastras, let him ever seek to obtain alms. So in other words, he will just preach philosophy to in situations that he feels that it will be accepted. So he doesn't do any of these things. Deal with all the astrological sciences or give advice or do other things with the idea that he'll get some benefit from it. You know, that, like that.
If only she was to be before.
Yeah, no, it means he wouldn't use it as an occupation. If in his preaching he uses it, that's another thing. But he's not using it because by doing that, then there should be naturally be. Just like if you go to the Brahmin for some advice and he gives you some advice, then you would naturally give a dakshin. Right, so that would be his lifestyle. So the sannyasi is not doing it because of that. Does that make sense? He will give up that. The grihastha ideally shouldn't be doing it like that also. He's doing it because it's his duty. But it's not the duty of a sannyasi. So therefore there's no necessity of it. If it's involved in his preaching, then nice. But does that make sense? Right? Let him not, in order to beg, go near a house filled with hermits, Brahmins, birds, dogs, or other mendicants. Dogs is obvious. Too many dogs, they bite your leg. You'll become the alms. Riti. The sannyasi avoids birds and dogs so as to avoid danger. It is not begged from houses wherein the others mentioned are situated, so as to avoid inconvenience to those who are already seeking alms. Because hermits, Brahmins, and mendicants, they may be there getting alms, so he won't go near there because he hasn't been invited, right, before. And anyway, a Brahmin doesn't go to something where he's not invited. right? So then in this case, if there's already people there, that either means they're in a group, then they're already begging there, so you don't go there. Or they were invited, but you weren't, so you don't go there. Right? Because if you go, then you might create inconvenience for the others. You know, from so many things. Either less food, or they were getting respected, but you're more respectable than them, so then it'll take away their, you know, so they won't feel happy. You know, so like these, you just avoid all these things. In the 18th chapter of this 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the activities of a sannyasi are described. Purport 11.18.18. The following statement concerning begging is found. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that there are three forms of collecting alms. Madhukar is the process of imitating the bee, who collects a tiny amount of nectar from each flower. In this way, the saintly person accepts a very small amount from each person, avoiding social conflict, right? Because if you just take a little bit, it won't bother anybody. And he avoids social conflict, means stays out of the way of something that's not going to. Anything that gives him trouble, he stays out of the way. The process mentioned here is ashankalripta, by which one indiscriminately approaches seven houses, being satisfied with whatever may be obtained. Right? So then you may go to many houses, just taking a little bit, but it's not specifically seven. You just go until a little bit until you've collected what is necessary. Then this one here, ashankalripta. Right? This is one of those rare times you see the L with the dot under it. By which indiscriminately approaches seven houses. He just goes to seven houses. Whatever he gets from the seven houses, that's all he begs. If he gets nothing, he has nothing. If he gets a lot, then he has a lot. So if he has a lot, then he gives it away. And being satisfied with whatever he may be attained. Pranita is that process by which one establishes regular donors and collects one's maintenance from them. Right, so you have certain persons you go to, you always go there regularly, and that because then, again, there's no anxiety. You can think about other things, you don't have to worry how I would maintenance. You just get up, go to them, collect what you need, go back to doing whatever you were doing. Right? So whichever of these, you know, whatever is the situation, and whatever one works best for one's situation. Right? That's why for mentioned for the Brahmin, then he has so many options of lifestyle, so then whatever works, or whatever combination. So the same way here, one's living by begging alms, then they have these three methods, so whatever works, or whatever combination. His hair, nails, and beard being clipped, right, so this is opposite of the vanaprastha, no hair, no nails, and no beard are being clipped, right, so here, it means, in other words, they're always kept short. Carrying an alms bowl, a staff, and a water pot, let him continually wander about, controlling himself and not hurting any creature. Right, so again, not hurting any creature is being brought out or wandering about. His vessels shall not be made of metal. They shall be free from fractures. Right, so some you find some of these, I forget, what is it? In one of the groups of the Shris, because they have the water galai and ten galai. So one of the groups, their sannyasis, will only use wood. So even their achman cups are made out of wood. You know, means like in Bengal, it's common that you take a squash, when it gets, it dries on the plant, it's a certain shape. And then when it dries, it gets very, very hard. And then you cut two holes in it so you get handle, and that's your water pot. So Lord Chaitanya, you see pictures of them using that, but it also mentioned they use those ones used by that. You generally see those who are from Haridwar in that use. It's from, I think it's from, I'm not sure, it's from a palm tree. So whether it's from the coconut or whether it's from the betel or which one it's from, the leaf, after it falls off, it's formed into a shape. And then they put a wooden piece on the top and a wooden ring on the bottom. And then, you know, it has a handle like that. And that's used as a water pot. You'll see those sometimes. They're kind of long. You see them with these big wooden handles. Or some of you see also some sadhus, they just have wooden water pots. Kamandalus, you know, big ones, wooden, but no metal on them. And then some put metal on for decoration. Okay, they shall be free from fractures, otherwise they don't work properly, right? It is ordained that they shall be cleansed with water, like the cups called kamasha at the sacrifice. I mentioned before that those sacrifice things are just washed with water, right? Like that. Certain ones were water or warm water, but he doesn't have warm water, so just with water. A gourd, a wooden bowl, an earthen dish, or one made of split cane. Manu, the son of Swayambhu, has declared to be the vessel suitable for an ascetic. Right, so gourd, wooden, or earthen. Earthen dish, you know, a clay pot, or split cane. Split cane. So it makes me from bamboo. You could do from bamboo, but only certain places have bamboo big enough. I haven't seen it, but it grows somewhere, or at least used to grow in this kind of area between here, Calcutta, and Bangladesh. That the bamboos are 30 centimeters across. So you can make a bucket out of them. Like that. I haven't seen any. But.
There is a bamboo center in South India. It's also, they have some.
Yeah. Some you have, but it's not that big. It may be like 20 centimeters. But this is 30. It's the biggest bamboo in the world. It grows between basically Calcutta and Burma, right? That kind of area across. So how much of it's still left, I don't know. But it's the biggest bamboo in the world. Like that. So, you know, you could use that also. Because sometimes you see that, it means, I've seen the labors with it. You have one of the knots of the, you know, the bottom has the knot, the top's open. And then you just put holes and put a rope on it and then carry it around. And it holds a lot of water. You can stick like a liter of water in there. So you could also have like that. So any of these kind of things. Let him go.
The cup made from the banana tree bark, is that?
That's generally only used for like serving prasad and stuff, because it doesn't last. It gets soft. These other things I talked about, they get hard, like that. But that'll stay and get soft. Like that. So the gourds means gourds that are dry. They dry on the plant. So then they become hard. Like the tamburas, sitars. That's all the pumpkins. Those are all ladders like that. They're all squashes, but they dry on the plant, so they get really hard like that. So those is what he would use. Let him to go beg once a day. Let him not be eager to obtain a large quantity of alms, for as an ascetic who eagerly seeks alms attaches himself also to sensual enjoyments. Because he wants, because then you attach yourself to other things. If you want one thing, you can want another. So the principle is you don't want anything, then you don't get attached to anything. So point, whether you want it or not, however much it's going to be will come. Right? But if you're attached to it, then you can get attached to other things. So if you're not attached to it, you'll get what you're going to get anyway, plus you're not attached to anything. Does that make sense? When no smoke ascends from the kitchen, when the pestle lies motionless, when the embers have been extinguished, when the people have finished the meal, when the remnants in the dishes have been removed, let the ascetic always go to beg. Right? So that's what he said before. He doesn't disturb me. Because also that time before that he said is not his time. Right? Brahmacharis, snatakas, and vanaprasas beg before lunch. While sannyasis should beg after the grihastas have finished their lunch. Again, this is to avoid any inconvenience to others. Right? Because the point is if it's there, it is there. There is there's nobody else to eat it. Right? So, but if he goes before, then it could be part of someone else's portion. So he avoids that. Right? But the others go before because it's the duty of the grihastha to serve the guest, give those who live by begging food and everything before he eats. So it's part of his duty to do that. So therefore, these persons also go at that time. But for the sannyasi, then it's afterwards, so that no one gets disturbed. Yes.
How can we relate that to modern ISKCON? ISKCON nowadays. Everybody is respecting sannyasi.
But that's their respecting. He's not dealing with it.
Yes, he's not asking.
Yeah, just like it's the grihasthas and brahmacharis, it's their duty to respect the sannyasis.
And to offer to the sannyasi the best quality of food to consider.
They're just rendering service according to their ability. You know, I'm saying brahmacharis don't have much, grihasthas have more. So the brahmacharis is just, you know, you might get served first of the same stuff that they're going to eat, right? You know, so, you know, they might put yours on a plate, they'll eat out of a bucket, right? You know, so like that. Or they'll give you the best bucket, you know, like that. You know. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of reciprocating. This is when he's living on his own, how he's arranging his own stuff. Is he just, it's whatever is not going to serve anyone else. It's his own arrangement. But if others are arranging, then it's according to whatever their means are. Because then it's their process it's part of their own personal development. Does that make sense?
So for a sannyasi, if that doesn't count, either because the devotees don't have the maturity, it should be indifferent.
Yeah, the point is it's a matter of, for him it doesn't matter. The difficulty is for the others, they don't get benefits. So then if he can explain it, nice. But if he doesn't, then what can you do? But it's not his problem, because the point is you know, between him and the Lord, because that's his traveling companion, is the Lord. So therefore, whatever the Lord arranges is what he gets. So he's not worried about that. So if others, for their own personal benefit, then offer something nice on that, that's always good. Just like the Brahmin, he's not looking for, you know, material benefit, but if people give it to them, then he'll use it in Krishna's service. We always have, what's very important is which aspect is our duty is what we do. You know what I'm saying? So the sannyasi, he looks at it this way, but the grihastha may look at it from another perspective, right? But the grihastha is looking at it for how the sannyasi should be, and the sannyasi is looking at it for how the grihastha should be, then there's a problem. So the grihastha is demanding that the sannyasi be renounced, and the sannyasi is demanding the grihastha, you know, give good facility. You know, so that doesn't work. So the point is, if each follows their mentality, it works fine. Does that make sense? Let him not be sorry when he obtains nothing, nor rejoice when he obtains something. Let him accept so much only as will sustain life. Let him not care about the quality of his utensils. Let him disdain all food obtained in consequence of humble salutations. For even an ascetic who has attained final liberation is bound with the fetters of the samsara by accepting food given in consequence of humble salutations. So in other words, by praising someone and because they feel their pride is you know, bolstered by that, then they feed you like that, then that he doesn't do like that. You know, it's even the Brahmin shouldn't do it. Right? It's not considered the high grade level for a Brahmin. You know. But if nothing else, you can do that. You know, so you will have those who do things like that, but generally it's not recommended. By eating little and by standing and sitting in solitude, let him restrain his senses if they are attracted by sensual objects. By the restraint of his senses, by the destruction of love and hatred, and by abstention from injuring the creatures, he becomes fit for immortality. So immortality means the transcendental platform. So love and hatred, right? So he's nothing he's attached to, there's nothing that bothers him. Right? His meditation, yes.
This is a definition of a Brahma Buddha stage?
Basically, it means in this order.
Yes.
It would be.
Like equanimity?
Yeah. Yeah. Let his meditation. Let him reflect on the transmigrations of men caused by their sinful deeds and on their falling into hell and on the torments of the world of Yama. Right? Because you engage in activities here, that's what happens to you. On the separation from their dear ones, on the union with hatred men, and on being overpowered by age and being tormented with diseases, right? So those who you have affection for, you always are apart from them. Those that you don't want to be with are the ones you always end up with, right? So it's just the way it works, right? So this is, you know, this has been spoken millions of years ago, so it seems to be pretty standard, right? So we shouldn't get surprised. Oh, this always happens to me. No, it happens to everybody. On the departure, you know, getting over old age and disease, so it always happens. On the departure of the individual soul from this body and its new birth in another womb, and on its wanderings through 10,000 millions of existences. 10,000 millions. So that's like, that's 10 billion existences. Yeah. On the infliction of pain on embodied spirits, but also sometimes millions, because they say koti, or this word, it depends on what word it is, that actually means 10 million. But you don't have a meaning of 10 million. You say millions. So 10 million is the number, so then that's, so then if that's the case, then it would mean then 100 billion. Right. Does that make sense? Because you have 100,000 is a lakh, so 100 of those is a koti or a crore. Yeah, you know, koti, what's it? Koti Chandra Shushi Tala, when it's talking about Lord Nityananda. There's the cooling effect of a koti means 10 million moons. On the infliction of pain on embodied spirits, and which is caused by demerit, and the gain of eternal bliss, which is caused by the attainment of their highest aim, gained through spiritual merit. Right? So everybody has problem because of demerit, and then, you know, what one gains by transcendence. By deep meditation, let him recognize the subtle nature of the Supreme Soul, and is present in all organisms, right? So as Paramatma, or in that particular quality that's attractive, or the active principle of everything. Both the highest and the lowest. And so he sees Krishna in everything, not just in just what's nice. Like the Brahman will contemplate everything, but he particularly focuses on what's pious and what's right and what's good, and puts him in those self in those situations. But sannyasi means he's looking at all things, whatever the situation. To whatever order he may be attached, let him, though blemished by a want of external marks, fulfill his duty, equal-minded towards all creatures. For the external mark of the order is not the cause of the acquisition of merit. Right. So either in connection with the sannyas, then you have the four, oh here, riti. The four stages are kutichak, bahudak, prayivajakacharya, and paramahamsa. However, these verses can all be taken to infer those of the other three ashrams. So, in other words, if you don't have the ideal marks of the order, you know, the order still works, because it's not the clothes and the trappings that make the order work. Does that make sense? That doesn't mean one doesn't worry about it. It just means a want of external marks means just he doesn't have them, whatever it may be. Like, grihastha should dress very nicely in that, but he doesn't have the facility. So it doesn't make him any less of a grihastha. Right? Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada describes the activities of the four stages of sannyas in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.127. The Paramahamsa stage is the topmost position in the renounced life. In sannyas, the renounced order, there are four stages: Kutichak, Bahudak, Parivrajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. According to the Vedic system, when one accepts the renounced order, he stays outside the village in a cottage, and his necessities, especially his food, are supplied from home. This is called the Kuticha stage. When a sannyasi advances further, he no longer accepts anything from home. Instead, he collects his necessities, especially his food, from many places. That's why Bahudak, from many. This system is called Madhukari, which literally means the profession of the bumblebees. As bumblebees collect honey from many flowers, a little from each, so a sannyasi should beg from door to door, but not accept very much food from any particular house. He should collect a little bit from every house. This is called the Bahudak stage. When a sannyasi is still more experienced, he travels all over the world to preach the glories of Lord Vasudeva. He is then known as Parivrajakacharya. The sannyasi reaches the Paramahamsa stage when he finishes his preaching work and sits down in one place, strictly for the sake of advancing in spiritual life. An actual Paramahamsa is one who completely controls his senses and engages in the unalloyed service of the Lord. And in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.18, the following information is found regarding the life sown in the Kutichuk stage of sannyas. In this regard, Srila Viragava Acharya has described the initial stage of sannyas, called Kutichuk, as follows. A man accepting initial stage of sannyas arranges for his children or other relatives and well-wishers to build him a kuti, or meditation cottage. He gives up worldly affairs and sits within the cottage, trying to remain free from lust, anger, greed, illusion, and so on. According to the prescribed injunctions of regulated life, he accepts a tridanda, purifies himself with a water pot, shaves his head, leaving a sika or tuft, chants Gayatri mantra on the sacred thread, and wears saffron garments. Bathing regularly, cleansing, performing achman, studying japa, studying the Vedas, remaining celibate and meditating on the Lord, he receives regular supplies of food from his children, friends, and relatives. Accepting only the bare necessities of life, he remains fixed in his cottage up to the moment of liberation. Okay. So in other words, shaving head with the sika, the Brahman thread, these are all still part of the regular standard sannyas. Like that. It means the ones where they don't have a sika, don't have a thread, then that would be the your Mayavada sannyas. You know, or that form of sannyas, like that. The mudras also use that. That form. Or the Paramahamsa. It means he would keep the sika. He would keep anything that's connected with identifying as a devotee. So neck beads, a sika, tilak, like that. But thread he may or may not wear.
The danda, is there some time period for carrying the danda?
Danda is generally always carried. But otherwise it's there. Prabhupada mentioned at one point, means in the 70s, well, I mean that's the only time he would have mentioned, right? So then carrying it for 10 years, but then after that using a cane or an umbrella, because generally those who took sannyas were older, so therefore then a cane would come in very handy, you know? And they would probably appreciate an umbrella. Well, before that nobody cares, you know, because they're tough. That's also the umbrella. The cane is pretty standard.
In the case of the Kutichak sannyasi, he has still some relation with his family.
But not the wife. You see, it's just children or other relatives or friends. They just bring food, but he only accepts a little bit, and it's only what's that. So that way, then, you know, they're also comfortable and things are regular. In other words, he's going to focus on his studies, right? Because there he says, okay, chants Gayatri mantra on sacred thread, wears saffron garments, bathing regularly, form achman, chanting japa, studying the Vedas, meditating on the Lord, right? So that means that he's receiving regular food so he can do those nicely, but then these are persons who have affection, so they'll always arrange it. Right, so once he's come to the point where he's very well situated there, and so it doesn't matter if it's regular or not, then he can become Bahudak. right? But it's also just there. He has his hut. He has the place. He goes out, and you know, so he can make it work. So once he becomes comfortable with that always works, then he can Parivrajakacharya. Then he can go out traveling to other places.
So then, is he supposed to move from one step to another?
Like that. Generally, we just seem to work with the Parivrajakacharya. But this other aspect is not a. The Prabhupada always talks about this. So it's. But even within that, he may be, you know, at his particular place or this particular temple and things like that. And so everything's arranged. And then at some point, he starts going out. You know, or may go around the zone and go around the world or like that. Point is all these are aspects that can be used. So whatever works. Right? You know what I'm saying? There's natural stages, but at the same time as these stages can be used in any kind of combination or anything like that. Though the fruit of the kataka tree, the clearing nut, makes water clear, yet the latter does not become limpid in consequence of the mention of the fruit's name. Right? So it's that the nut makes it clear, but it's not by saying the name of the kataka tree nut that the water becomes clear. You have to actually put the nut in the water. The same purport can be found in the following verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.18.17. Okay. One who has not accepted the three internal disciplines of avoiding useless speech, avoiding useless activities, and controlling the life air, can never be considered a sannyasi merely because of carrying bamboo rods. Right? So that's the point that's being made, is that it clears because it actually is doing the work. But just saying the name doesn't make the water clear. So saying the term sannyasi doesn't make one a sannyasi. It's by avoiding useless speech, avoiding useless activities, and controlling life air. So kai mana baka. That's what the dunda represents, is the body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. So if that's there, then that's sannyas. But just saying sannyasi doesn't make one a sannyasi. You know, just like before. What was he? The Brahmin. Just by saying Brahmin doesn't make him a Brahmin, right? You know, the example was like you have a stuffed animal. You know, it doesn't do a whole lot. You know, it doesn't have any meaning. Okay. Okay, we're not going to get through all the way through. Oh no, we finished this one. No, we didn't finish this one. Okay, so it's saying the same thing again, but more detail. In order to preserve living creatures, let him always, by day and by night, even with pain to his body, walk carefully scanning the ground. Right? Even though it may be a problem for you, but you walk in such a way not to bother other people, you know, or other living entities. Okay, I think we'll stop there. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.